determined what is the closest use of processing.
Maybe what we do is we take that section in the 600s that he's referring to and amend that section. So that there can be no...
Instead of doing this rule resolution.
Instead, there's no question as to who needs to be notified.
Okay.
And whose job it is to notify.
Right. Well, it's in there very clearly that it's on the applicant. But what I don't think is in there is when they have to provide notification to the office that they have in fact done that.
Right, because they come to the hearing with it.
Right.
And it's too late at that point.
Right.
Because if they mailed it out 7 days or 8 days before the hearing, chances are no one's gotten it.
Right. And then you have to essentially reschedule the hearing, and they have to do a whole new list of
owners and a whole new app. That's what I'm trying to avoid, because it's happened twice now. Not here, but elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think we were pretty close
happened
to
here.
That last time.
It happened here, too, last time. Yeah. So, we'll table that, and I'll do that side. Very planners.
I have 7 o'clock.
Call the meeting of the Milford Township Supervisors order with a pledge of allegiance to the flag.
Of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
What's your pleasure on the minutes from the January 21st meeting?
I just want to see one correction made. Under the spongy moth, they put unless they had 20 foot that it would have to go through the municipality that we actually put to ask the county.
We did. Oh. That's the next sentence. Need further clarification regarding this.
Oh, okay.
That's why I changed the word to say may.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did I read one before you corrected it?
Municipalities. I put May here.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Right. I'll make a motion. We accept the minutes.
Second.
I'll abstain. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
So pass. Treasurer's report.
Thank you. After the last meeting, I received $100 from zoning and $500 from Planet Aid. So there is $5,749.97 in Wayne Bank payroll account. $16,756.40 in Wayne Bank investment account, $77.34 in Wayne Bank ingredients account, $32,601.98 in NBT Bank checking account, $15,995.38 in NBT Bank money market, $165,692.91 in Pliggett general account, and $29,972.19 in Pliggett liquid flows account. So we need to transfer $10,000 from Pliggett General to Wayne payroll account for February 18 payroll.
Why are we taking it from $10,000 from the Pliggett account when we got $32,000 in the MBT account that's only paying 0.2% interest? And Pliggett is paying 4.40.
$32,000 does not include the proposed bills for tonight's meeting. That's
okay.
Why.
Okay.
Which is about $13,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest will be needed for the next meeting's bills.
Almost $14,000.
And this $10,000 is for the next payroll.
Okay. Just ask me.
I'll make a motion that we transfer $10,000 from the Pliggett General to the Wayne payroll account for payroll and payroll taxes.
I'll second it.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
So passed. Roadmaster's report. The street department's been pretty busy the last couple of weeks. We haven't had any major storms, but we've had a lot of, I call them material eater storms. You get the ice storms and you get refreezes and these little 1-2-inch snowstorms. We got to have out using material. The other night we had our roads real good. Within like 2 hours, it was a freeze over. Had to call the guys back out. But I will say one thing, our roads get a lot of traffic onto them, and So far, we've only seen one accident on a township road during a storm. And that was basically coming around a corner too fast and also in the ditch, somebody was injured. There was one the other day up towards Malibu, but again, that was right before the truck even got there. So, guy's been doing a good job. We only have one full-time employee. The rest of the guys are all, basically, we have a kid that works for us for 32 hours a week. The rest of the guys are part-time at will. And so far, every time I've called them, they've been there no matter what time, day or night. So, I thank them every time. We have received all of our salt that we purchased in 2024. So, in the last 2 years, we actually cut our amount of salt that we purchased. We used to always get 400 ton. The last 2 years, we've only been purchasing 250 ton. But I'll have to look at it come the end of this year and see what we need. Because, like I said, these small storms eat a lot of material.
When's that order got to be in by?
We usually bid it out in the summertime.
I usually do the bid around April after winter, so I can
see how much is left over.
See how much is left in the shed and stuff.
Yep.
The contract actually runs from July 1st to June 30th. It's not like it's a single year bid because the winter is split in 2 years. Like I said, we just received the last of the 24 contract. So that's all out in the shed. Also with our contract, it does give us the option to buy an additional 100 ton, up to 100 ton, if needed, above and beyond our contract for our bid price, which I believe last year was $126.50 a ton. The good thing about us, we use treated salt. Our treated salt works down to zero temperature, where normal rock salt, 15 to 18 degrees, we'll quit melting salt. Melting ice.
So we'll have to keep an eye on the prices and figure out whether it would be beneficial to buy more before the end of the contract.
Yeah. You don't like this whole thing.
Well, if that's
especially right now,
the
right now there is a salt shortage. Because
yeah.
I'll call up an order of salt and I'll have it in 3 days. It's taken 7 to 10 days now to get our salt. And when I called him the other day, I was talking to him, and there is a salt shortage. And moving on to zoning.
Send Harvey to Utah. I think I'll do
it. What?
Salt flats.
Do we have any reports on zoning?
No. Okay.
Public participation. Mr. Weber, you got anything?
Actually, yeah, I was going to ask about PCLP. Are you going to be meeting with them about this rate increase? I think we had, what, 2 years ago? Right? So we all got our letters for Happy New Year with a 12.8% increase. Do you ever meet with these guys, with PCLP, or attend those meetings when they have the public hearing meetings?
They have come in here a few times.
Yeah. Because one of my concerns is that, we get our power from Orange and Rockland County, and with what's going on in New York with sustainable energy, I mean, if they do away with gas-driven electric supply, our electric's going to go through the roof. I've mentioned this to the Pike County Economic, whatever their name is, Pike County Economic Development Association. Yeah, that's it. And they just went, it's PCLP. So if it's on PCLP, I think the municipalities should actually start bringing this up. Because if that happens in New York, I mean, the presentation that was given by Corning, who are the parent company of PCLP, is that you're looking at a 300% increase in electric costs. Mm-hmm. Is that true or is it not true? But even if it's half true, it's a disaster, right? So I think it would behoove the townships and the borough, I'll bring this up to the borough as well, that you need to start engaging with these folks and see where are they at. Now, there's talk that they are trying to bring aboard a new supplier out of Philly, and there's a station that's being built. I'm not sure of the exact location, but you know, this needs to be watched carefully. You know,
that new station's 4 to 5 years out.
Exactly, that's 4 to 5 years out. That's my point. I mean, you're not going to just.
But they are. But they are running a new line up that's going to hook into MedEd and Pike County. I mean, and Pennsylvania Power and Light.
Right, but how? Like you said, it's 4 years, right?
No. Not when they're running now.
It was 4 years from last year when they were here telling.
That's for their substation that they want to build.
Right.
But there is two substations up there right now. There's a MedEd substation on Route 6,
mm-hmm.
and there's a PP&L substation on Route 6.
Right.
And Pike County Power Line is running a power line up that way.
If you noticed last summer, they started doing these really wide right-of-ways back to the poles going up Route 6. And they came in before they did that, and they told us that was for them to connect to MedEd's system and PPL's system.
So they're actively working on switching to a supplier.
Well, they're actively working on making so that they would have a dual feed then,
right.
Fred. So if you have it go down on one side, you can feed from the other side, and you know, whichever way has power. If there's a situation, you can do it whichever way has power. But it would give the ability to shop from the additional companies for supply, which right now, because the connection is only in New York, and some of the New York providers don't do business on this side, you have much less opportunity to shop your rate.
Well,
once
the
they
New
connect,
York side is going to be a disaster. Never mind who you can get it from over there. Forget it. That's, you know, if they go to the sustainable energy thing, it's going to be a nightmare.
But
that's good to know. So if they're running lines now,
they're working on it.
They're working on it.
You've been up by 84. Where they just ran the brand new lines across to 84.
Yeah, I'm usually in the ozone. I'm paying attention.
Yeah, last week they were working right by the Chinese restaurant up there.
Oh, okay.
And now they're actually running brand new transmission lines over 84.
Great, that's good to hear. So
additional lines.
Any indication as to why this increase is needed? I reread their letter.
Well, the money that they have spent on upgrading in our area is just substantial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've done more in this area than anybody's ever done.
They've done more since they've owned it than Arnold Rockland did in 20 years.
And their response time has been very good.
Yeah,
what we agreed to do, and you know, we'll discuss it at that item on the agenda, but what we did the last time was reach out to the Pennsylvania Office of the Consumer Advocate and ask them to hold hearings,
mm-hmm.
and we provided testimony to them regarding the service that was being provided, how the community felt regarding the rates, et cetera. And so outages was a big part of the discussion the last time, and I imagine will likely be part of the discussion this time. But because the Office of the Consumer Advocate got involved, they did hold hearings. And I don't believe that the rate increase that they received was as much as they requested.
No, but that's always a ploy, right? I mean, you go in high, you shave off a couple points, and then it's like, oh.
Well, that's also why they're back at the table again in a short period of time, because they didn't get everything that they were looking for the last time, right? That's part of how it works. We have been engaged with them now for 4 years, trying to get them to change all of our streetlights over to LED lighting, because we spend more than $10,000 a year on electricity for the streetlights, and if they switch to LED, we could decrease that expense. And they have changed a few of them.
There's still a few to go.
There's still more work to do. So, but that's why the item is on the agenda, so we could discuss what options we may or may not wish to take as a group to push that forward.
Well, it's encouraging that they're running the line, so thank you for that. You should make a note of that. And are they as active throughout Pike County or just in our area?
They take care of...
I know they do Pike County, but I mean, like you said, they're really...
They're basically just our area.
They're Milford Township, a small part of Dingman Township.
Okay.
Small part of
Westfall,
so Pike County Light and Power is just kind of the northeast corner of us.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So that's interesting.
Roughly, I think 4,000.
I think they got like 4,000 customers total.
4,500 customers.
Something like that.
And that's part of the problem is when they're doing all of this work, they only have a small footprint of people to spread the cost out to, in order to recover the expenses, and that's That's one of the differences. When you have a really large company, they can spread the cost much further than they can with a small company.
It would have been helpful to have that in the letter so people would know that. I think they're just looking at this and they're like, oh, here comes another increase and no real reason given.
Now, we were discussing this earlier. They had crews out. They were actually digging in the ground to see what shape the poles were in underneath and marking them, the ones that had to be replaced. And they've been coming out and replacing the ones that were tagged.
And, that's more than Orchard Rockland ever does.
They send the tree companies out to trim the trees, which
Orchard
Rockland didn't do that. And if you call that there's a tree that looks like it's going to fall on the wires, even if it's not in there right away, they've come out and cut them down.
Yeah.
Just so it doesn't take the power out.
Okay.
And I didn't think it was Corning anymore.
Corning no more.
Corning sold it to a private equity company.
Oh, that's right. But Corning is still involved, aren't they?
I don't believe it's just a
private equity company?
Private equity.
Which is disconcerting because that's just bottom line stuff. You know, that's not anybody who really cares. But
it may be prepare it for the next sale, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So, yeah, I forgot about that part. But
I would love to see, because it's so small, I would love to see it become an electric cooperative.
I'd certainly like to see something other than an investment company. I think we agree on that. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Fred.
Anything else on public participation?
Yeah, I have a quick question. I know that you guys can't comment on Santos Farm, but can you tell us what the process is that they or anybody who submits a conditional use application, which it looks like they have, what do they go through? What are the steps that they have to take? And if you can comment, where are they in that series of steps?
The Board of Supervisors doesn't really know the answer to that part, Cresta, because we are isolated from that information. But our attorney could probably comment on that to the extent it's appropriate to comment for us.
I'll comment as to the process. The process,
can you hold on just a second?
The process is a dual-step process. The conditional use applicant has to apply both for a zoning permit and a conditional use. The applicant, his application would then be reviewed by the zoning officer, and it's the zoning officer who determines whether the conditional use application is complete, and if so, he would send it to the Planning Commission for their review and recommendation. In the case of a conditional use, the supervisors don't actually get involved. Only because we are sitting as the finder of fact and also legal conclusions based upon evidence that's presented at a hearing. So instead, it's their quasi-judicial function that they serve when ruling on a conditional use application. But normally what would happen is the Planning Commission would review, and then the Planning Commission would make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors would then conduct the public hearing, at which time the applicant would have the burden of going forward and showing that it meets the criteria in the zoning ordinance for a conditional use. And if they met those criteria, then any protestants would have the opportunity to present evidence to show that the use is not one that would be conducive to public health, safety, or welfare of the residents.
So this is a process similar to what we saw with the warehouse.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, similar process.
Can you give me an indication of where we are in that process with...
Where we are right now is we're at the very beginning. The application was submitted to the zoning officer. The zoning officer reviewed it and sent it back to the applicant, indicating that he had several comments the applicant has not addressed those comments yet.
Okay. Thank you for answering my question. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Anything else on the public?
With that, I don't know if you can comment on that, but doesn't that include the idea of a mini hospital?
We have not seen the material and would not be able to comment.
I haven't seen the application.
Because I know I spoke with the developer Mike DePetris back in early December, and he gave me a heads up that Legends was going to be involved with coming to the Planning Commission or zoning, and at the end of January, which is what happened, it was right at that time. And they've been involved with a lot of these kind of projects. I mean, they did the Smithfield Gateway which is on 209 by Route 80 in Marshall's Creek, Smithfield area there. That's his project, and a bunch of them on Route 611 in Stroudsburg too. So, I mean, he's familiar. I think he's familiar with what needs to be done around here. It's just that it was interesting. I know the commissioners have been talking about the idea of the mini hospital. It looks like, and they had mentioned that to me too, that they were going to include that in the proposal, you know, as maybe a good selling point for them.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on that. So as far as a micro hospital, basically the plan that's put together is just writing things in that could be there, which are allowed by zoning. There is no written contract or deliverables with Northwell Health. It's taken them, I guess, close to 2 years to open up a walk-in clinic.
Yeah.
And the idea that you're going to put a micro-hospital here when, you know, by ambulance, Bon Voyage is 10 minutes away is ludicrous. I mean, it just makes it appealing. It looks like it's good on paper. The idea of actually getting a micro-hospital here, which I would love to see, but again, it doesn't make sense here. Bonsecours course down the road, and how are you going to staff it? I mean, you can't get staffing for the walk-in clinic.
Tony.
So there's a lot of things to look at here. I mean, this proposal also has a 16-pump gas station, you know, so, and it's the carrot that's always dangled is jobs. But if you do that, so now you put in an 80-room hotel, and you put in this gas station with a convenience store behind it, it's like, okay, we're going to do job creation. Well, who goes first? Fairbridge Inn, Meyer Motel, the Shell Station, Turkey Hill? How many jobs are you losing? So this needs to be rigorously reviewed and really monitored. This is just a developer looking to make money. He's got seven of his family on staff and payroll, okay? None of them live here. And I understand this all comes down to the zoning, but that doesn't mean we have to agree with it. And I don't plan to, so that's my comment.
Tony, I just ask you to comment briefly on what the township's role is, generally speaking, regarding the determination for an individual applicant, and what are the things that the township does not have the ability to do. So one thing that I know I just heard Mr. Weber mention was the issue of becoming competition for area businesses, which, you know, is a hard thing because in a small town, your local businesses are kind of like part of your extended family. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe under the law that a municipality is permitted to impact kind of the free market system that our country runs on by protecting existing businesses and excluding competitors. So if you could just comment for a minute or two about the things that we can and the things that we cannot do, generally speaking, not particularly associated with this individual application.
In general, with any conditional use application, there's a set of standards in the ordinance for each of the uses, and those are considered the standards by which the township can review. There's also a set of general standards under Pennsylvania law for any type of conditional use. Once an applicant meets those standards, and they are not, you know, they're minimum standards, once the applicant meets those standards, it then turns upon the protestants to show that they are somehow impacted, their health, safety, and welfare is impacted. And it can't be any type of impact, it's got to be a real impact. Now, the problem in dealing with conditional uses, as with any non-residential project, is that if someone is going to propose non-residential uses, which I think was being talked about before, they may not necessarily be the exact non-residential uses that are actually built after the project is approved. So it's very difficult, as long as the use that's proposed meets our zoning requirements, and as long as the use as built meets the zoning requirements, the township's not in a position to deny that application because a conditional use is a permitted use under Pennsylvania zoning law. what the township is allowed to do is to listen to the health, safety, and welfare complaints of the residents, and if those complaints, if there's objective evidence indicating that the health, safety, and welfare of the residents is going to be impacted by the development to such an extent that it becomes an issue for the township, then the township would be allowed to deny that use. But normally, those are permitted uses. That's why they're legislatively written in the book as conditional uses. And quite frankly, it all depends on the evidence that's presented by both the applicant and any protestants at the time of hearing.
So Tony, exactly I heard you say two things that I'd like you to expound upon a bit. You said the impact has to be a real impact. Mm-hmm. Could you more further define what you mean by that?
Sure. The impact upon the residents has to be an objective impact as that is able to be scientifically shown. So in the case, for example, of a solar farm, there has to be something that is scientifically shown to have an adverse impact upon residents that may be located within so many feet of a solar farm. Cellular towers, solar farms, they do emit radioactive waves, but under federal law, those radioactive waves are determined not to be, not to have an adverse impact unless it's within so many yards of a residence. So that, unfortunately, is the kind of evidence that you'd be looking at. With respect to whether or not it adversely affects the character of the neighborhood, which is a general standard, that general standard, this property is located in what we call a developmental district zone. So some of the uses in our book in the DD zone would include a hotel, a motel, a gasoline service station, things of that nature. So those are all items that would be considered to be conditional uses.
So Tony, wait. One more thing that I would like you to expound upon that you mentioned before we go to questions is the question was raised by Mr. Weber. If an applicant comes in with a speculative development and they propose one use, but down the road they decide that they would like to actually construct a different use.
Right.
Under our zoning, how does that get handled?
It would be handled by a modification to the conditional use.
Right.
So they essentially
they would have to file an application. Right.
They would have to file an
application for a modification of the use, and the use that's proposed would have to meet the same standards.
So you're saying, essentially, to boil it down, is if they meet the zoning, if they're allowed to have that specific type of business in that zoned area, you don't take into account whether it's competition for an existing
business. No, you don't.
You're not permitted under the law.
We're not permitted to take that into consideration. In fact, the only consideration that we are permitted, other than what's in the ordinance, to listen to are factors that would impact adversely the health, safety, and welfare of the residents of the township.
Thank you.
Fred?
So, and that's exactly what I said. I mean, if the zoning allows for it, the zoning allows for it. My point was that I don't have to agree with it, and yes, I will be one of those voices that disagrees with the plan, and no matter what the Petrus comes up with, because he is not, like I asked him at one meeting, guys, why are you doing this
to enhance
the neighborhood?
What I'm going to ask you to do is to remember that this body cannot accept testimony outside of the hearing.
Right. Well, it's not testimony, it's my comments. Right?
You're essentially commenting about the intent and the character of the applicant. So we need to take testimony at the hearing and public comment at the hearing about the application.
I'll just finish with, I understand fully that the zoning allows for this, I understand conditional use, that's fine, and we'll just see how it goes going forward.
Now, the only other thing that I would add that Tony didn't speak about is the point of it being conditional use is that the recommendations of the Planning Commission and the action by the supervisors can also have, instead of in addition to the yes or no, can have a set of conditions that are recorded along with any any potential yes. There's no conditions with a no, but there can be conditions with a yes.
And a perfect example of that would have been the Dollar General